The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 10th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Now as Jesus and his disciples went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So she came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But Jesus answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. When I was a child, it never occurred to me to ask my parents, "Are we going to church today?" Nor did it ever occur to me to say, "Do I have to go to church today?" It's just what we did. Week after week, Sunday after Sunday, we went to church. And no, I wasn't a PK, a preacher's kid. Many would likely say times have changed and things were different back then. So I would ask, what has changed? What is it that has changed? My snarky answer might be, everything. Everything has changed. Things are dramatically different today than they were when I was growing up. And they're especially difficult for our young families. I know from experience that Pastor Ben and Pastor Gary, I'm sure you as well, have been asked this question. Pastor Ben, you will be asked this question many, many times over. Because it's been true of my entire ministry. People have asked, "Where are our children?" Or, "Where have all the children gone?" The question comes as a lament. And it most often comes from our wise, faithful, and elder members. Our elders. How can something that was once so important in the lives of many people, and still is for many of us, how could it be seemingly unimportant to the generations that have come after us, including many members of our own families? It's obvious there has been a steep decline in church attendance. And I don't mean just today because of the world championships here in Eugene at Hayward Field, nor do I mean just during these past 2+ years of the pandemic. For decades, studies have shown that churches, mainline churches especially, churches in America, churches much like ours, have been in steady decline. Even pre-pandemic, it's been determined that regular churchgoers is now defined as people who attend church on average once a month. That's regular churchgoers. So you want to know what the answer is? Come on. Do you want to know? So do I. Because if I really had the definitive answer, you know I'd be writing a bestseller book. But here's the thing. After ruminating on our gospel reading for today, I think I may have stumbled on something that speaks to those gut-wrenching laments of pastors and parishioners alike. And just to keep you in suspense just a bit longer, I'd like to share a little story with you first. True story. When I was growing up in Southern California in the 60s and the 70s, shopping malls were being built and were popping up all over the place. My dad was a career man with Sears, Roebuck, and Company. But he never actually worked in a store. He was a buyer. His job was to work directly with the companies that made the Kenmore product line of appliances and other hardline goods. And his job was to make sure that there was sufficient product available for the consumer. You might say his job was directly related to keeping the supply chain working properly, a rather important part of commerce that we've actually learned more recently. Anyway, when I was a youngster, while these retail shopping malls were popping up in the sprawling suburbs up and down the West Coast and all across the country, I distinctly remember my dad saying these words. Well, you can be sure that Sears will never stay open on Sundays. Now, my dad was right about a lot of things, but that bold prediction of his, he could not have been more wrong. We all know that. And therein lies the problem. Or perhaps my answer to the dreaded question of where are our children? Or where have all the young families gone? My short and flippant answer is they've become distracted by many things. They've become overburdened. They're too busy. There are simply too many choices. Because somewhere along the way, shopping malls and stores like Sears did start staying open on Sundays. So it was no longer essential workers who had to work weekends, but many people who were having to work on Sundays. And in two-parent households, suddenly both parents were working outside the home. So weekends became time to catch up on household chores as well as much-needed rest. Soon after, coaches were scheduling practices and athletic events on Sundays in the morning. And on the list goes. With more disposable income than that of my parents' generation, the options for us grew exponentially to travel, for outdoor recreation, for sporting events, you name it. The choices today are endless. Couple that with what we've seen in the last 25 years, both the positive and negative effects of instant communication and 24/7 access to virtually everything from entertainment to consumerism via the aptly named World Wide Web. It now seems as if the world is spinning wildly out of control in a web of frenzy and constant frenetic motion. The result of these changes is that we become more and more distracted by many things. To the detriment, I would argue, to the detriment of our own mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional health and well-being. And that affects, or you might even say inflicts, our children and our children's children. And on top of that, we've lost a sense of authentic community. A time and a place to gather and to pause and to center oneself. And so it should come as no surprise to anyone that the church simply cannot compete with all of those choices. Good ones and not so good. The choices we all have to make on a daily basis. Yet this may come as a surprise to you. But this really is not a new phenomenon. That's the realization I came to when I was reading the gospel this week and rereading and reflecting and ruminating on it. We really aren't all that different today than generations before us. So back to today's gospel. It appears as though Martha is being scolded by Jesus for becoming distracted by her many tasks. She's obviously feeling overburdened, perhaps even working herself into a frenzy of anxiety and anxiousness. And to top it off, I suspect she's become downright resentful that she's carrying the load of providing hospitality to her guests all by herself. So she does what many of us tend to do. We do the passive-aggressive thing. We complain to someone else. She complains to Jesus that her sister Mary isn't helping her, and so she wants Jesus to do something about it. Now, I really don't think that Luke intended for us as future readers to imply that Jesus was comparing Martha to Mary as though one should be lifted up as more virtuous than the other. That's not what's happening here. Too many people, especially women, have characterized themselves as Martha's or Mary's. And Martha has been classified as the one who's the doer, and Mary is the contemplative one. And some have concluded that one is far better than the other. But God knows, we know, both are needed. Both are necessary. So instead, we need to take a closer look at the context. And I don't mean the context that women in those days were expected to serve the men. Nor do I mean that Mary, who was breaking the social barriers of her day by taking the posture of a student and sitting at the feet of Jesus, her teacher. I don't think she's being commended by Jesus for doing that. The context I want to point to is to remind us that this is a pivotal point in the Gospel of Luke. This is the juncture at which Jesus has set his face toward Jerusalem and the cross that awaits him there. He's fixated on one thing. And Luke is describing the days leading toward a pivotal reorienting of what God is about to accomplish through Christ's death and resurrection. This is going to change the whole world for all time and in all of eternity. And I think we need to take a closer look and see what Jesus is actually looking at accomplishing here. Because he's looking out for Martha. Even in this story, he's looking out for Martha. He's trying to get her to see that she is unduly concerned about her many tasks. And those distractions are causing her unnecessary anxiety. Such distractions prevented Martha from choosing the one good thing that perhaps Mary instinctively knew was more important than anything else in that particular moment in time, to be in the presence of the Holy. This can serve as an example to us. Even those of us who have gathered here this day in these pews, and those of you who are worshiping from home. This can serve as a reminder to us that our distractions may also prevent us from choosing what is ultimately the good thing, the thing that is most needed. It harkens back to the writer of Ecclesiastes, who centuries before had penned the wise words, "There is a time for every matter under heaven." There's a time for doing and a time for being. A time to sit in the presence of the Holy and to listen for the still small voice of God. And a time for action. As we heard just last week in the parable of the Good Samaritan who showed mercy to a neighbor in need. In that story, it was the priest and the Levite who walked by, distracted by their many tasks, who passed by this man in the ditch. They failed to show mercy to him. the one who was robbed and left lying in the ditch half dead. And it was the surprise, the Samaritan of all people, who through his compassion became the example of doing the right thing in that moment. At this particular juncture in the life and ministry of Jesus, things are ramping up. It's time for his guests, his friends, his students to take the posture of a student and learn from him, to let go of their many distractions and unburden themselves by choosing the one thing among many, the one thing that is truly necessary. In the same way, we who live in a culture who tend to define ourselves and our worthiness by what we do, by how busy we are, we need to be reminded that there are times when the better thing, the thing that is most needed, is to pause for Sabbath rest, to let go of our many distractions and all of our worries, and allow God to replenish our hearts, minds, bodies, and souls. And so I hope and I pray that you who have chosen to worship with us as a community here today, those of you who are worshiping with us as another part of our body of Christ, one together, called together in unity, that all of us who have chosen to worship this day can put away all of our distractions, to put those things aside, and to listen for the voice that beckons, "Come to me, all you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Rest for your weary souls." Amen.